18. At the Burnt Flat Hotel, where we stopped for a tank of gasoline, a police patrolman was taking affidavits about a man found dead on the road. The victim, he told us, had been white, in his 20s, and a derelict. Motorists had been sighting him on and off along the highway over the past 3 days.
"And he's a right mess now. We had to scrape him off the bitumen with a shovel. Truckie mistook him for a dead roo."
The accident had happened at 5 in the morning, but the body, what was left of it by the road train, had been cold for about 6 hours.
"Looks like somebody dumped him," said the policeman.
He was being most officiously polite. His Adam's apple worked up and down the V of his khaki shirt. It was his duty, we would understand that, to ask a few questions. Run over a coon in Alice Springs, and no one had given it a thought, but a white man.
"So where were you boys at 11 last night?"
"The Alice," said Arcady in a flat voice.
"Thank you very much," the officer touched his hat brim. "No need to trouble you further."
All this, he said, looking into the cab, without once removing his stare from our passengers. The passengers, for their part, pretended he did not exist and stared with set faces at the plane. The policeman walked towards his air-conditioned car. Arcady rang the bell for service. He rang again. He rang a third time. Nobody came.
"Looks like we're in for a wait," he shrugged.
"It does," I agreed. It was 3 in the afternoon, and the buildings were swimming in the heat. The hotel was painted a toffee brown, and on the corrugated roof, in bold but peeling white letters, were the words "Burnt Flat." Under the veranda, there was an aviary of budgerigars and rosellas. The bunk rooms were boarded up, and a sign read, "This business is for sale." The name of the proprietor was Bruce.
"Profits went down," said Arcady, "when they took away his off-license."
Bruce had made a mint of money until the change in licensing laws, selling fortified wine to Aboriginals.
We waited.
An elderly couple drove up in a camper, and when the husband pressed the service bell, the barroom door opened, and a man in shorts came out with a bull terrier panting at its leash. Bruce had 2 to 3 feet, red hair, flabby buttocks and oval jowls. His arms were tattooed with mermaids. He tied up the dog, which yelped at our passengers. He eyeballed Arcady and went to serve the couple with the camper. After the man had paid, Arcady asked Bruce, very civilly,
"Could we get a tank, please?"
Bruce untied the dog and waddled off the way he'd come.
"Pig," said Arcady.
We waited. The patrolman was watching from his car.
"They have to serve us eventually," Arcady said, "by law."
10 minutes later, the door reopened, and a woman in a blue skirt came down the steps. She had short hair, prematurely grey. She had been making pie, and the pastry still clung to her fingernails.
"Don't mind Bruce," she sighed. "He's mad today."
"Unusual," Arcady smiled, and she hunched her shoulders and exhaled a long breath.
"Going in," he said to me, "if you'd like to see some local colour."
"Come on,"
the woman urged as she hung up the nozzle.
"Have we time?" "We can make time," he said, "for your education."
The woman tightened her forelip and let out an awkward laugh.
"Why don't I buy them a drink?" I suggested. "Do that," said Arcady. "I'll have a beer."
I poked my head through the window and asked what they'd have. Mavis said orange, but changed her mind to orange and mango. Ruby said apple. Big Tom said grapefruit, and Timmy said Coke.
"And a violet crumble," he added.
"Violet crumble is a chocolate-covered candy bar." Arcady paid the woman, and I followed her into the bar.
"And as you come out," he called after me, "look to the right of the light switch."
Inside, some men from a road gang were playing darts, and a station hand, togged up in Western gear, was feeding coins into a jukebox. There were a lot of Polaroid pictures pinned to the walls, of fat people, naked, and a lot of long balloons. A notice read, "Credit is like sex. Some get it, some don't." A medieval scroll had the caricature of a muscle man and some oldie Englishy lettering. "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for I, Bruce, am the meanest son of a bitch in the valley." Alongside the bottles of Southern Comfort, there was an old bottle topped with yellow liquid and labelled Authentic NT Gin Piss. I waited. I heard Bruce tell one of the drinkers he'd bought a place in Queensland where you could still call a boon a boon. A telegraph engineer came in dripping with sweat and ordered a couple of beers.
"He had a hit-and-run job up the road," he said.
"Yeah," Bruce displayed his teeth. "More meat."
"What's that?"
"I said more edible meat."
"Edible?"
"White man."
Bruce hung out his tongue and guffawed. The engineer, I was glad to see, frowned and said nothing. The engineer's mate then pushed through the door and sat on a bar stool. He was a lanky young Aboriginal half-blood with a cheery, self-deprecating smile.
"No coons in here!"
Bruce raised his voice above the noise of the dart players.
"Did you hear me?"
I said.
"No coons in here!"
"I ain't a coon," the half-blood answered. "I just got skin problems."
Bruce laughed. The road gang laughed, and the half-blood clenched his teeth and went on smiling. I watched his fingers tighten around his beer can. Bruce then said to me in a voice of forced politeness,
"You're a long ways from home. What'll it be?"
I gave the order. "And a violet crumble," I said.
"And a violet crumble for the English gent."
I said nothing and paid. On my way out, I looked to the right of the light switch and saw a bullet hole in the wallpaper. Around it hung a gilded frame with a little brass plaque, the kind of plaque you see nailed below antlers or a stuffed fish, reading Mike, 1982. I handed round the drinks, and they took them without a nod. "So who was Mike?" I asked as we drove away.
"He's Mike," Arcady said. "He was Bruce's barman."
It had been a similar baking summer afternoon, and four Pintubi boys, driving back from the Balgo mission, had stopped to get gas and a drink. They were very tired and excitable, and when the eldest boy saw the gin piss bottle, he said something quite abusive. Mike refused to serve them. The boy aimed a beer glass at the bottle and missed. Mike took Bruce's .22 rifle, which Bruce kept handy under the counter, and fired above their heads.
"That, at any rate," said Arcady, "is what Mike said at the trial."
The first shot hit the kid through the base of the skull. The second shot hit the wall to the right of the light switch. A third, for good measure, went into the ceiling.
"Naturally," Arcady continued in the same unemotional tone, "the neighbours wished to contribute to the unfortunate barman's legal fees. They organised a gala with a topless show from Adelaide."
"And Mike got off?"
"Self-defence."
"What about the witnesses?"
"Aboriginal witnesses," he said, "are not always easy to handle. They refuse, for example, to hear the dead man called by name."
"You mean they wouldn't testify?"
"It makes the case for the prosecution difficult."